Hi, everybody. This is Steve Savitsky. Welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today we have Rabbi Elchanan Oberstein. Rabbi Oberstein, how are you?
I'm fine.
Well, that's great to hear that. That's really, really wonderful. And we're going to talk a little bit about an article that's in the Jewish Action, which has to do with the American Jewish families who, what we call, defied the odds. As the people who came here when people didn't even know what Yiddishkeit was, and yet they managed to keep the fire burning. So we're going to talk about your wife's family, I guess, the Siegel family, right?
Correct.
So tell us a little bit about the Siegel family and, you know, what happened to them and when did they come and so on and so forth.
It's important to understand that most people gave up. The word, the Talmudic word, Yeush, most people realized that when they came over the sea that they just could not do what they did in the old country. The ones who remained firm were few, and they really did defy the odds. The Siegel family came around the turn of the century, between the 19th and the 20th century, around the year 1900. They came originally from Panevėžys, Lithuania, and they landed in the port of Boston. And when they got to Boston, the people there said, "You're much too frum. Go to Baltimore. Baltimore is the Yerushalayim of America."
So and here's your question. When you say, when people said they were much too frum, I mean, is it they, I mean, did she, this is who your wife's grandparents?
My wife's grandmother, yeah.
Yeah, grandmother. So that she covered, she covered her hair.
She wore a sheitel. She was one of the only women in those days in America. I mean, there were hardly any women who wore sheitels in those days. And she was a very, very modest woman. And they were poor people. They were balabatim. They weren't rabbonim, although I'm sure they had in their past somewhere. But they were determined to be frum. And they settled in a neighborhood called East Baltimore, which was the neighborhood of Baltimore where the immigrants lived. Today it's near what they call the Inner Harbor, which is a tourist area. And they remained frum. Mr. Siegel, Chaim Siegel, was, I think he sold chickens and he did other things, but they lived really very poorly. They had 9 children, most of these children were born in the first 30 years of the 20th century. The reason that my wife's father, Yecheskel Siegel, Chester Siegel, was the youngest, and he was actually married around 1932 to his wife, and I'll come back to that, but they did not have children for 20 years. So my wife is a first cousin to people that are literally 20 and 25 years older than her. And that's why, so it's her grandfather, but time-wise, it could just as easily be her great-grandfather.
So let me answer this question. So people came here, obviously, to escape the life in Europe. And do you think they had any idea what life was like in America? Or was it total, you know, it was a total hefkeris in a way, you know, when they came, they had no idea what hit them.
It is unusual that anybody remained frum. I mean, even in New York City, there weren't that many that were able to. But you did have people who may themselves have been Shomer Shabbos. But one of the stories that I heard from my father-in-law was of some very important rabbi who, before he went to shul in East Baltimore, woke up his son to do his paper route. Meaning, even the people who learned Daf Yomi, the people who went to the Chevr Shas, realized that their children were not going to be like them. There were no day schools in America. There was no proper chinuch in most of America. Baltimore is an exception to the rule because we had the Talmudical Academy, Yeshiva Chafetz Chaim, in 1917. However, Chester Siegel, my father-in-law, was a little too old to go to the Talmudical Academy once it was a day school. He went when it was public school. You went and learned for 3 or 4 hours in the late afternoon. That was his Jewish education. He was at the same time as Rabbi Mordechai Gifter and several other people of that generation who went to Europe and studied in European yeshivas,
but he himself did not. I was reading about what they had to do to try to keep everybody Jewish. So they started a club or something called the Das B'nai Israel. What was that about?
Is very similar to what the Young Israel was in New York. The Das B'nai Israel was a group of young American boys who started a shul. It originally started as a club and then developed into a shul, and there was boys and girls who were Shomer Shabbos. And they also attracted boys and girls who were not necessarily from Shomer Shabbos homes, but who joined the club and became frum because of them. My mother-in-law, Rosalind Siegel, came from Altoona, Pennsylvania.
I was going to ask you about that. I mean, that sounds even more incredible than coming from Baltimore.
Yeah, her parents were frum people, European Jews, not from Lithuania, Ukrainian, and they were Shomer Shabbos, and they sent their daughter to Baltimore. They must have had some relatives here. And my mother-in-law, when she came, met a girl, and the girl said, "Let's go to the Adas. That's where the boys are." And this was before political correctness. And she went to the Adas, and her husband-to-be, Chester, saw her. And she spent a summer in Baltimore, and by the end of the summer, he wanted to marry her, but she said, "I have to go back home and finish high school." So she finished 12th grade, and then they got married. And they were married in front of the Adas, which was had a shul in East Baltimore, and the boys from the Adas held the poles. And they were devoted. I told you they didn't have children for 20 years. They spent those years being the youth leaders of the Adas, bringing in dozens and dozens of kids who have great grandchildren today who are from because of what Chester and Rosalind did in the Adas in those years. But the Siegel family is more than Chester Siegel. He had an older brother, Morris Moshe, who was a leader in the community and very active in all of the organizations, in mikveh, shul, everything, and there were sisters. And each of the sisters, you may have heard of Rabbi Marvin Sugarman, who was a rabbi in California. So Rabbi Sugarman is my wife's first cousin. His mother was a Siegel daughter. And there are others. There's a lot of people named Naaman. There are people named Siegel. There are all kinds of people. I would say there are probably at least 1,000 descendants of Chaim and Sarah Fagy Siegel who are from B'nai Torah today.
So let me ask you this question. So you talk about the major challenges. So I guess the two major challenges was, one, lack of education. So what did they do about that? And two, what did they actually eat? I mean, there was no real OU around, so what did they eat?
Well, first of all, let's take Parnassah. If you wanted to be a Shomer Shabbos, you had to be in wholesale, not in retail. I mean, my father-in-law was a traveling salesman, not because he wanted to be, but because he could therefore avoid working on Shabbos and Yontif. Kashrus, there were many, many kosher butchers. There was no OU, and I can't tell you that every kosher butcher was reliable. That's certainly true. But there were many, many kosher butchers in Baltimore, and I would say most of the immigrants bought kosher meat. I don't know, it didn't have the supervision of today. Baltimore had a chief rabbi of sorts. His name was Rabbi Abraham Nachman Schwartz, and he was the rabbi of, they called it the Rosh Hashul, Shomri Mishmeres, and he was like the chief rabbi of Baltimore. He was the founder of Talmudical Academy, and so there was more Yiddishkeit in Baltimore than in some other cities. It wasn't hefkeris like everywhere, but it wasn't what the OU later provided. And as far as chinuch is concerned, it's a miracle that anybody stayed from. We don't like to say this, and it wouldn't be politically correct, but my father-in-law said some of my best years were wasted in TA. And by that he meant that they had European rebbes who had no way of relating to American boys. And the fact that he stayed frum was wonderful, but there were other boys from frum homes who just couldn't relate to these European rebbes. Today we're fortunate to have rebbes that actually are American and know how to relate to their students. That's a major
difference. So what did they do? They taught
in Yiddish. Here are these boys. They were American kids. They went to public school all day. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they went for hours and hours to some rebbe teaching them Gemara and Yiddish. I mean, Baruch Hashem, some people stayed frum. And maybe a few dozen out of all the hundreds in America went to Europe to study. But the fact that anybody stayed frum is a miracle in those, really, if you think about it. And most didn't. Most didn't. East Baltimore
would you say,
was full
let me
of
ask you, let me ask you another question. Would you say that it's true that, you know, many of them didn't stay frum, but somehow I imagine that there was not a great amount of intermarriage, even though maybe I'm wrong. But
there was no intermarriage in those generations was hardly known. I mean, if somebody intermarried in those days, you probably sat shiva for them. I mean, in the Eastern European. The intermarriage in Baltimore, Maryland in 1930 meant that a Russian married a German.
Gotcha. Okay.
That was intermarriage. And the Germans considered that pretty scandalous. We have a large German. Baltimore is an old Jewish community, and we have Henrietta Zold. Her father was a rabbi in Baltimore in a shul Oheb Shalom, which is today Reform, but in those days it was sort of like what we would call conservative today, maybe.
And did your grandparents, I mean the Siegels, mm-hmm. did they have a big group of friends also who were similar?
Those days, I would think that the families were the main source of sustenance, meaning there were 9 Siegel children and they lived near each other. And they gave each other encouragement. That's why most all of them stayed frum. I don't want to say 100%, but I would say almost all of the 9 children, maybe one didn't or 2 the most, but the others all remained very strongly frum and sent all of their children to Beis Yaakov, which we had one of the first Beis Yaakovs in out of town, but that didn't come till much later. And Baltimore was a strong city. There were a lot of frum Jews here. The problem was that they couldn't keep their children frum.
Uh-huh.
It had the reputation Yerushalayim of America. That is really what it was called. Because compared with other places, but it's relative.
So it wasn't New York, but it was next to New York. Was it?
I don't know. We're going to call it. It's different than New York. I don't know. New York has far more people, but Baltimore had a reputation. I mean, if you weren't frum, there were most people probably worked on Shabbos. That's the truth. But there were a lot of first generation people who tried their best. You also have another thing where the mother was Shomer Shabbos and the father worked on Shabbos. I wouldn't want to go into specific names, but there are important Russia yeshiva today in the biggest yeshivas whose grandfather worked on Shabbos, but whose grandmother was frum.
But the grandfather who worked on Shabbos many times would go to a minyan early and then go to work or come back for mincha or something like that. So it was just they really out of necessity, they really had to do it. They had no choice.
Absolutely. That's what the Hashkama minyan in 1920 was not for frum people. It was for guys that had to go to work. And that it was a different world. There was no... The Siegel family was unique and of the ones you picked, you picked 5 families because they defied the odds, because they didn't just become traditional. They really remained strictly frum. There are most of the children of the Siegels either went to YU or to Ner Yisrael or to Lakewood. I'm talking, you know, there were very few of the next generation that did not continue on to higher Jewish education among the boys. And the girls, yeah, I mean, they're Lakewood, Ner Yisrael, and NYU all had children, grandchildren of Chaim and Sarah Fagy Siegel, quite a few.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is why we wrote the article, because, you know, people forget that back then in the late 1890s and the early 1900s, before there was a major influx of Jewish life, immigrants, there were people who really defied all the odds, and no matter what happened, they stayed firm, their kids were firm, and wow, it's incredible.
If you study Jewish history in America, the word Yeush is really the right word. People didn't think it was possible. They just assumed. I'll tell you one story. One of the Siegel brothers married a woman from a very firm home, and unfortunately, they weren't Shomer Shabbos, okay? So the only one of the brothers, only one. And one time we invited over his widow and her daughter and her grandson, who are already conservative and not from, and it was for a meal in Sukkot. And my wife's aunt said, "Oh, my father used to sleep in one of these." And I said, "And my children sleep in one of these." That's the difference.
Wow, unbelievable.
That's really amazing. The difference. The ones who became not so frum, Nebuch. I mean, I don't know a lot of them aren't Jewish anymore.
Right,
but the others, you have in Yerushalayim, you have in all over the country, you do have Siegel descendants who are learning Torah, teaching Torah, and raising families of Torah.
Amazing. Rabbi Oberstein, it has been a pleasure having you on the program, and I think those people who are going to be reading the article would love to listen to the interview, and really, a tremendous, I think it's a great covered and a great honor for the Siegels for what they did, Chaim and Sarah Fagy Siegel, what they did. Now hopefully people will realize it. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful day. Be well.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.